So this week's Torah portion is Chayei Sarah. If you're reading the first line from the scroll, Vayiyu Chayei Sarah Ma'al Shana Va'as Rim Sana Va'Shavim Shava. Which would translate to the years of Sarah's life was 127. In Hebrew, what you have is 100 year, 70 year, and then you would have 7 in year. That's how they would translate the Hebrew if you're reading through it. So I'm going to start with Genesis 24, verses 1 through 2. The idea of finding Isaac a wife. It says this. Abraham was old, well advanced in age, and Yahweh had blessed Abraham in all things. So Abraham said to the oldest servant of his house, who ruled over all he had, "Please put your hand under my thigh." It's one of those, you sit back and wonder what Abraham would have thought when he knew that Yahweh was going to say he was old and well advanced in age to some degree. Maybe he might have wanted something different there. But I think he'd been happy with Yahweh. He was blessed in all things. It's interesting too, and I put this as a seed for you to think about, the eldest servant ruled over all he had. We hear that phrase again when Joseph is in charge in a number of houses, where he was a servant and he ruled over all the person had as a part of responsibility. And we see that in regard also into Revelation, in regard that there will be those who will have thrones and be in charge, right? Servants of Yahweh in charge of all he has. Genesis 24, 3 through 4. "And I will make you swear by Yahweh, the Elohim of heaven and the Elohim of earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites, among whom I dwell, but you shall go to my country and to my family and take a wife for my son Isaac." Now he's very emphatic. You shall not choose a wife from the Canaanites. Absolutely, you will go back to my family, the one I left behind to get here. You're going back to them, but you're not going to these Canaanites. And that's what we're going to focus on today. Why? He continues, though, in Genesis 24, 5 through 6, "And the servant said to him, perhaps the woman will not be willing to follow me to this land. Must I take your son back to the land from which you came? But Abraham said to him, beware that you do not take my son back there." Verse 7 and 8, "Yahweh Elohim of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my family, and who spoke to me and swore to me, saying, to your descendants I give this land, he will send his angel before you, and you shall take a wife for my son from there. And the woman, if she's not willing to follow you, then you'll be released from this oath. Only do not take my son back there." It is so important. Yahweh's like, "You don't understand. So I have two major rules, Abraham, to the servant. One, do not take a Canaanite wife. Two, don't take my son back there. Do not do it." But I told you, my question we're going to try and pursue today is, why not the Canaanites? What's so bad? What does Abraham know, or what's significant to him? He's like, will not marry one of those. But we have to go back to even further the beginning. So we're going back to Genesis chapter 9, 22 to 23. This is after Noah in the ark, Noah drinking the wine, Noah getting drunk. And Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father, and told his two brethren without. And Shem and Japheth took a garment and laid it upon both their shoulders and went backward and covered the nakedness of their father, and the faces were backward, and they saw not their father's nakedness. 24 and 26. And Noah woke from his wine, and he knew that his younger son had done to him. And he said, "Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants shall he be unto his brethren." And he said, "Blessed be Yahweh Elohim of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant." Now again, we read that, no big deal, okay. Do you realize in this week's Torah portion, both of these two families are at least mentioned? Where does Abraham come from? Shem. Shem, specifically here, is who he comes from. And of course, the Canaanites come from Ham, and thus Canaan. And so he looks back going, oh, he looked upon. Now this is one of those things we have a hard time understanding, because the idea of looking upon one's nakedness can literally just be to look upon one's nakedness, but it also can be an act. Notice that Noah says when he woke up, he knew something had happened to him. It can also be an act. And so when we go looking at Torah and the Scriptures, we've got to be very focused. There are a number of phrases throughout Scripture that talk about our father's nakedness. And there can be two ways that's seen. One, Torah says that if a person were to sleep with the father's wife, then you have uncovered the father's nakedness. Or to have relations with the father, you have uncovered his nakedness. Both of those cases go back to this idea. And so it's almost like Scripture is meant to be there going, realize there's probably more going on than what's being mentioned here. And Abraham's going, whether he knew of this curse or not, I believe he did. He's like, my son should not be marrying one of them. That led me to Deuteronomy chapter 20, 15 to 17. Because how bad are those Canaanites? "Thus you shall do to all the cities which are very far from you, which are not the cities of the nations." Now guys, he's been talking about cities. Go in, offer them peace. If they will give you peace, then they all become your servants. If not, then go to war with them. But where we start the underlining, it changes. "But of the cities of these people, which Yahweh Elohim gives to you as an inheritance, you shall not let nothing that breathes remain alive. But you shall utterly destroy them. The Hittite, the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, the Jebusite, just as Yahweh Elohim has commanded you." You're going to get rid of all of them, nothing left breathing. Unlike Noah's Ark, where here Yahweh is saving an entire family and all the animals that they have, this is the opposite. Even down to their animals, all shall be gotten rid of. Now, this is usually one of the portions that's used to show, see, this God of the Old Testament's vindictive. He shows no love. The hard part is we're reading these with eyes that don't make the connections, nor do we understand. We've got to be careful. This is actually a very hard act of love. Because if we just take John 3:16, "For God so loved," what? "They sent his only seed, son," right? He's sending them in with the reality of knowing he's going to have to watch all this occur. But there has to be a reason. So why? Genesis 20:18 is probably the most important thing, and it comes after he just said to wipe them out. And it says this, "Lest they teach you to do according to all their abominations which they have done for their Elohims, and you sin against Yahweh Elohim." You see, the issue that he has with the Canaanites is that they have certain traditions and teachings within their culture that are being passed down from generation to generation to generation, and they are like an infection. And we all know there's all of this going around about Ebola. Sin and sinful acceptance and culture is like a disease. allow it to get into one, a foothold somewhere, and it will take over the entire area. Yahweh knows that. But some might be going, well, what about Genesis 38? Well, what about Genesis 38? Let's look at that. Genesis 38, 2 through 5. And I found this interesting. And Judah what? Saw. Now, what was Ham's problem? He saw his father. That caused a problem. And look at it. And Judah saw there was a daughter of a certain what? Canaanite. He saw her, whose name was Shua. Now, Shua means wealth. And he took her and went into her, and she conceived and bore a son, and he called her Ur. And she conceived again and bore a son, and she called him Onan. And yet she again conceived and bore a son and called his name Shelah. And he was at Hazib, where she bore them. So Judah marries a what? A Canaanite, of which he has three sons. Notice again, you may have missed it, who named the sons? He named Ur, she called Onan, and called Selah. So she's passing on names, traditions to her children. 38:13-15. Now, I'm jumping a lot. What goes on here, of course, is that his wife dies. His two sons die because of the way they're living. I believe Judah thinks that it's her that's the problem. And while he makes a vow, oh, go to Tamar. Go live with your parents. And when my youngest gets old enough, I'll marry him off to you. To take care of you, to bear children. He doesn't keep his promise. Probably thinking, well, I gave her my eldest, he died. I gave her my second, he died. I wonder where the problem is. Not realizing that the problem was where? In him. What he had already taught his children. Look at this. And it was told Tamar, saying, look, your father-in-law is going up to Timnah to shear his sheep. So she took off her widow's garments and covered herself with a veil and wrapped herself and sat in an open place on the way to Timnah. She saw that Shelah was grown and she was not given him as a wife. Then what does Judah do? He saw her. He thought she was a harlot because she had covered his face. He saw her. Now his wife is dead. He's grieving. This is Genesis 38:24. So she arose and went away. This is after the act. Again, I'm jumping here. He has relations with her, thinking that she's a harlot. She conceives. She has a son. 38:24. And she arose and went away and laid aside her veil and put on the garments of her widowhood. And it came to pass about 3 months after that, Judah was told, saying, Tamar, your daughter-in-law has played the harlot. Furthermore, she's with child by harlotry. So Judah said, bring her out that she would be burned. Judah's, of course, giving a lot of compassion and mercy, right? Because she's the problem. 38:26-27. So Judah acknowledged them, and again I'm jumping. She goes, oh, the man who had relations with me, this is his staff, the one he's supposed to be shepherding his sons with. This is the ring of his family that he's supposed to be upholding. Right? Goes through these things, and Judah goes, oh my goodness, they're mine. They're what I gave her as a down payment when I couldn't give her a sheep or a goat. Again, so Judah acknowledged them and said, she has been more righteous than I, because I did not give her Shelah my son, and he never knew her again. Now it came to pass at that time for giving birth, that behold, twins were in her womb. Now do you realize most probably Tamar is also a what? Canaanite. Do you realize from this act of her dressing up and now to have a child, this is the line of Messiah? But you're going, no, wait a minute. Yahweh wanted to eliminate all the Canaanites. Why would he allow a Canaanite in among his line? Why would he do such a thing? Isn't he going against himself here? So I thought, well, let's look at Messiah. How did he deal with this idea? This may surprise you. It did surprise me. It's in two Gospels. I'm only showing you one. Matthew 10:2-4. Now the names of the 12 apostles are these. The first, Simon, who is called Peter. Andrew, his brother. James, the son of Zebedee. John, his brother. Philip and Bartholomew. Thomas and Matthew, the publican. James, the son of Alphaeus. Lebeus, whose surname was Thaddeus. And Simon the what? One of his disciples was a Canaanite? And it's not only in Matthew, it's also in Luke. So is Yeshua going against the command of Yahweh? Letting one of his disciples be a Canaanite? Matthew 15:22. Yeshua had an interaction specifically for a woman from Canaan. Behold, a woman of Canaan came to the region and cried out to him, saying, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed." 24. But he answered and said, "I was not sent except to who? The lost sheep of the house of Israel." I'm only sent for them. 15:27-28. She said, "Yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs eat the crumbs which fall from their master's table." Then Yeshua answered and said to her, "O woman, great is your faith. Let it be as you have desired." And her daughter was healed from that very hour. Do you realize by making a point, look at her faith, that he is speaking to her in regard to this is another child of Abraham. Because the child of Abraham is one that is of faith. And she makes a point, who is her master? She knows who her master is, and she's willing to take the crumbs off the master's table. Now again, you're like, well, I don't understand. There seems to be a paradox, Rabbi, what you're saying today. There's really not. I just want to review. Genesis 24:3-4. He said, "Do not take a wife for my son among the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell." 5 and 6. And the servant said to him, "Perhaps the woman will not be willing to follow me to this land." What the servant's saying is, what if she's not willing to leave her family behind and her culture behind and her nation behind? What if she's not able to do that? And he goes, "You know what? Don't worry, but don't take him back there. Because what Yahweh has brought out cannot go back. My son has changed." He makes a point here, we may have missed it. Yahweh Elohim of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from my land and my family, who swore to me and swore to me saying, the descendant took the land, he's expecting that if Yahweh could do it with his family once, that he can do it with his family again. But he's making a point. If she's not willing to follow like me, then don't worry. You're off the hook. What did Abraham's servant pray for in a wife for Isaac? And I think it goes back to this idea of what is the lost sheep of Israel to some degree. Not completely, to some degree. The lost sheep of Israel are those out there that are willing to leave their traditions, their culture, their father's house behind to follow. It's interesting, when he prays for this wife, His characteristics are, oh, that she would get down here, she would bring the water for her job, I would ask, she would not only give me water, she would come and actually take care of all my camels, and by the way, he had other men, so he had probably to take care of them. So notice what he's saying is, a great characteristic for a wife or any believer is he who's willing to serve. Not go, oh man, I have to do more. Lessons as we close. Yahweh does not want to destroy a people, but a culture. When there are traditions and cultures of which that culture could actually, by their teachings, cause more problems for his children, then he will go in and eliminate that teaching. But notice the point is, well, if it's about the Canaanites, how come he allowed the Canaanites in over and over again? Because it's not about the Canaanites, it's about the teachings they're doing. And you know what? If a Canaanite is willing to leave behind being a Canaanite, then guess what? They are no longer a Canaanite anymore. Right? A set of habits and teachings. This is the world's Torah. Are we willing to leave that behind? Yahweh accepts all who are willing to follow and change, no matter who you are or where you come from. Do you realize that all of Terah's sons are in the Messianic line? All three? Rebekah is Haran and Nahor. But you know what? If that wasn't the case, you also have Lot coming in, right? Through Ruth. Right? One way or another, all three of Terah's sons have a branch in the line of Messiah. All of Noah's sons. You're like, well, where does that come in? Well, you have a Canaanite, so that's Ham. You know what? From Japheth comes Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is the beginning of Egypt. Weren't there some Egyptians who came out of Egypt to come and follow? You have all the sons of Noah. Even this week's Torah portion, Abraham's sons, Midian, and all those that are sent off, we see many of them that are going to be part of the, not only Lion Messiah, not specifically Lion Messiah, but within his kingdom. Don't take him back. Once we have followed Yahweh, he's like, you can't go back to those culture, those traditions, those habits again. The servant's prayer, serve and love the widow, the orphan, and the stranger. That's what Yahweh wants. Who's willing to get down and care for those around them? And Yahweh wants that because guess what? That's what he does. He gets on down on his knees for us, to serve us, to cleanse us, to heal us. He expects us to do the same. So again, we get to this Torah portion, and I just want to close with this one point. We read over and over, and I had a gentleman who's a Gentile call me once. He says, Yahweh just wants to kill all the Gentiles. And I said, no, he doesn't want to kill all the Gentiles. But Yahweh does want to wipe out all the lies. Because lies lead where? To death. He wants to emphasize his truth and his saving plan. And how great a plan it is that the example is he is bringing people out of a world of lies and teaching them the truth. Teaching them the truth. And that goes back to who is the bride. That's what this whole piece is. Who is the bride? Who is the one that's going to be joined together? He is the great blessing in that regard. Baruch Hashem.